2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news. Here's our host, Boyd Matheson, on KSL News Radio.
Many employees sign non-compete agreements when they take a new job, but are these agreements an element of the free market, or are they a market failure? Do they benefit employees and entrepreneurs, or act as roadblocks to upward mobility? Let's begin.
Think you know the news of the day? Think again.
Well, it's a real privilege today to have the president of the R Street Institute, Eli Lehrer, is joining us today. And Eli, we always appreciate the work of R Street and all of your experts and contributors there. They make such a difference on our program, and it's nice to have the boss on the program today.
Well, I'm flattered, and I'm so glad that all the people who work for R Street make me look good. They're all smarter than I am, and I'm just really pleased to be here, Boyd. So thanks for having us, and thanks for having people on our staff as well.
Well, that is the key to great leadership, is to always hire people who know more and have a different angle than you do. And but you had a fantastic piece in The Hill talking about an area that a lot of us think about every once in a while, usually when we have to sign one, dealing with non-compete agreements and what they are, what they mean, and some of the changes that are coming and how those changes should be made. And so just for our listeners, just kind of give us a tee up in terms of what actually does that mean when you're signing a non-compete? What does that look like in the country right now?
So a non-compete agreement, which currently covers about 30 million U.S. workers, about 10% of the overall population, is an agreement with an employer that you will not go into business for yourself in a similar line of business or go to work for a competitor. And in my judgment, and in the judgment of many people, these are egregiously unfair and should be done away with.
And you focused in your piece on The Hill that non-compete agreements not only have been a failure, but they've been a component that has suppressed wages and even suppressed innovation. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So they really do two things at two ends of the labor market. For lower wage workers, say somebody working in fast food, having a non-compete that they couldn't go into another fast food chain makes it hard for them to search for higher wages. If Burger King is paying a buck more an hour than McDonald's, an agreement that says you can't go to work for Burger King makes it very hard for somebody, particularly just starting out, to look for higher wages. At the other end of the job market, for the most skilled and highly paid individuals, they're an enormous disincentive to entrepreneurship. Many companies, really most great companies you've heard of, are started by people who were at one company, learned some things, thought they could do it better, and did. That's how Apple Computer famously started. It's how HP famously started.
Right.
Company after company started this way.
It's so interesting. And so as you start to look towards the solution, this was the part of your piece that I loved getting into, how we actually should be going about it. You cite some examples of some states like California that has had a ban on non-compete agreements, why this needs to be done federally, but how it's done really matters. Explain that for us.
Right. So California's had great success with its ban on non-compete agreements. It's the reason why Silicon Valley is there, probably. Now, in terms of how it is done, the best way to do it would be through a law. The Federal Trade Commission has proposed some regulations instead. These regulations are well-intentioned, but they probably aren't going to achieve all the good that could be done in getting rid of non-compete agreements. And in some ways, they might even set the cause back. So good intention, but wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
This is something that Congress should do.
Yeah. So I want to dive into that a little bit deeper, because this is an area we always say what is done by executive pen is usually undone by executive pen. But the thing that I want to get to, and you alluded to this in your piece, Eli, and that is that doing it by executive order, not only does it usually end up in the courts, but it also tends to create greater uncertainty for the very people that you're trying to help.
Precisely. Now, in this particular case, it would be done by FTC rulemaking rather than executive order. So it would be slightly more difficult to undo. But the basic thing is that particularly for people who might be starting new companies, something that can pretty easily be undone through another rulemaking or maybe even an executive order is something that is not going to give the certainty that investors need to back startups.
Mm.
And for people who are looking to start a new business, who are the ones who employers are most likely to go after, unless they and their investors can be pretty sure that non-competes aren't going to be enforceable, they're not going to get the investment. So from the standpoint of encouraging innovation, a rule is really demonstrably inferior to a law. And that's what we need is a law to ban non-competes nationally.
And just describe for us in terms of what that might do. If you had a state like California who has a ban, you have other states that have maybe different levels of bans and some who don't at all. Describe just how that wouldn't work and also how that would disincentivize a lot of companies in terms of how they go about their business and their hiring.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, right now we do have a hodgepodge of laws all over the country. For people in certain states, it's pretty good. In fact, it's a big benefit to California that it's the one big state that bans all non-competes. So in certain states, it wouldn't change anything. But in states that do have, or that do not have non-compete bans, or have only limited bans on non-competes, it would make it much more attractive for innovative people to stay in those states. Mm. And also, it would make it easier for lower-wage workers to switch jobs in search of higher wages. Honestly, for California in particular, we are many people with really innovative ideas relocate to California specifically because non-competes cannot be enforced in that state or against that state's residents. For California in particular, it might even hurt a little bit to have the same standard nationally because right now California is the one big state. I want to say Oklahoma and Nebraska are the other two that ban all non-competes.
Okay. So now let's dive into this in terms of how we move forward. Again, having Congress do something at the federal level. Describe this kind of in two pieces, Eli. One, you talk about how if the FTC just does this by rule, how that might slow it down. And then I know there's some bipartisan work going on out there that could be part of that national solution.
Right. So there are bipartisan bills that were introduced in both the House and the Senate and are going to be reintroduced, if they haven't been already, this year in the new Congress, that would ban it. If it's done by rules rather than by legislation, and the FTC just steps in and does all of this itself, then that would take a lot of the momentum out of the need to do legislation. Well, you might get some results more quickly from the FTC rule. The FTC rule is certain to be challenged, even if it survives every challenge, can be undone pretty quickly and easily. It's not going to give the level of certainty that a law would. What the regulation seeks to do is a good thing, but this is just the sort of thing that we should have done by Congress, not by executive branch rulemaking.
Yeah, and that is the key. And what do you see on the horizon in terms of that bill getting any kind of traction?
Well, the announcement of this FTC rulemaking may take out some of the traction. Nonetheless, this is a bipartisan bill that would have a big effect, and a good one, on a lot of people's lives. If Congress, which of course is divided in any number of ways, wants to accomplish something good, something where, for example, labor unions and free marketers are generally on the same side,
right,
that will help a lot of people. This is something with bipartisan support that the president's administration wants to do. The president will obviously sign it if it were to pass. And it's exactly the sort of thing that Congress can do to show that it can do things. And if people want to have a Congress that gets stuff done, and Congress itself wants to reassert its authority, this is a perfect place to do it. The fact that the rule is there, that Congress acts, therefore making the rule unnecessary, could be a very good thing for Congress to do, just as a statement.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that this can move forward and that members of Congress will realize that this is a good idea for just about everyone.
Yeah, fantastic. Great insight. Eli Lehrer is the president of the R Street Institute. Always appreciate your perspective and the great organization you lead. Eli, thanks so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure to be on the show, Boyd. Thank you so much.
We're going to go ahead and step aside for some quick commercial break. Interesting insight there from Eli, for sure, in terms of how those non-competes work, how it's a hodgepodge right now, state by state. What's the federal component of this? Should it be done by rule in an executive branch agency? I think there's better ways to do it. Congress needs to do their job, and there is an opportunity to do that. There's a bipartisan bill that could be brought to the floor, could be debated, amended, and that's what we actually have to get to. All right, we're going to step aside for a commercial break here. When we come back, we're going to go back to my conversation from hour number one, my conversation with Representative Chip Roy from the state of Texas, talk about where Congress is, Speaker of the House battle, and what comes next. Stay with us.
Think again with Boyd Matheson on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.